Sandhill cranes are almost commonplace now here in Wisconsin, at least as in my opinion anyway. And there has been some discussion and a proposal to have a sandhill crane hunt. Well, is that a good thing or not a good thing? What are the pros and the cons of this? We'll talk about that today with our two guests, Jeb Barzin, Director of Field Ecology for the International Crane Foundation, one of our guests with me in the studio. The other, Ann Lacey. Ann is the long-term care crane research coordinator for the International Crane Foundation. And obviously, these two have a lot of experience with cranes here in the state, and there's been a lot of research conducted with them, and I'm sure they have a lot of good information to pass on about cranes. And I'm wondering about you. What do you think? Do you like cranes? Do you live in an area where they visit? What do you think about that proposed hunt for sandhill cranes? Do you support it? Why or why not? Love to hear from you at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org. And we've had several people already go to my Facebook page and post comments there. You can do that at The Larry Mueller Show. Love to hear from you one way or another. And Jeb, great to see you again.
Oh, it's great to be here. Thank you, Larry.
And Ann, nice to see you as well.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning to you. Well, I guess I'm right. They say about cranes almost being commonplace now here in the state, but obviously that was not always the case.
Well, you know, the way you characterize it is a very good representation of how most people in Wisconsin, regardless of how they feel about the crane hunting issue, feel. It's a wildlife success story. And the real issue then is, what do we do with that? And how do we want this resource to be used? And it's important, if that discussion is going to occur in a constructive way, to separate out the things that really are related to hunting, such as, do we want to use cranes in this way, versus things that are not related to hunting, like crop damage and controlling the population, because they really don't need to be related to crane hunting at all.
Yeah. How did the population recover so dramatically, Anne?
A good combination of legislation and, the Depression had a lot to do with it, unfortunately. And it was a confluence of those things in the 1930s, the Migratory Bird Act, at the same time as a lot of people were leaving the Central Sands area where, for example, Buena Vista Grasslands, Horicon National Wildlife Refuge was created, and Horicon National Wildlife Refuge was created. Suddenly we have these areas that are free of people, and the cranes were free to do their thing, and they've not looked back. But also our great agricultural heritage has really helped out cranes as well, because they love those agricultural fields, nice, wide open. And many of the fields are right up to those great wetlands as well. So.
Yeah, absolutely. Where do we find them in the greatest concentration here in the state?
Most of it is in the east central counties, especially now. And we've been getting lots and lots of calls, people seeing cranes. They come back through a corridor in the past Lake Geneva. I see a comment on the Facebook page, up towards the Horicon area. So Dodge County, lots of birds in Columbia, Marquette, Green Lake counties, up towards the Fox Valley.
But you see that, I mean, I can hardly think of a county that I've driven through where I haven't seen a crane.
Cranes are pretty adaptable, and they're using habitats that are what we would have thought unusual 30 years ago or even 20 years ago, because most of the areas, like where Ann was describing, those areas are full. And the only way to breed there is to force somebody else out of a territory so that you can be able to breed there. And so birds either move and find unoccupied habitat, which is getting hard to find, or they have to usurp somebody else's territories in order to breed. You know that in Wisconsin, out of the 72 counties, there's about half of the crane population exists within 8 of those counties. Mm. And those are the counties that Ann was describing in that east central part of the state. And that's where what Ann described as habitats that the birds like exist in their greatest abundance, where you have wetlands and corn or wetlands and agriculture existing together in a very high abundance.
Well, I want to talk about the hunt in Wisconsin. Before I get to that, let's take maybe the larger context here a bit. What are other states considering or implementing or have implemented?
Well, the process is a broad process that first involves the federal government and the states working in cooperation with each other in a political entity called a flyway council. And we have two flyways that our cranes go through. They breed in the upper Midwest, which is the Mississippi flyway, and many of them winter in the southeast, which would be the Atlantic flyway. So those two flyway councils and the states that are members of those flyway councils get together, and the first thing they did is create a management plan as it relates to this population of sandhill cranes. And then they say, could this population withstand a hunt or not? Do we want to do that? And if they answer that question yes, which has been the case here, they then say to the states, if you want to apply to hunt cranes, you can generate a proposal and we'll review it.
So that's how it works. And what about Wisconsin then? What's specifically being proposed here?
Well, there was a proposal in Wisconsin to hunt cranes, and the purpose for hunting cranes was to stop crop damage, and which was specifically mentioned in the legislation. And that's one of the things that's problematic, because crop damage doesn't have anything to do with hunting. You can hunt these birds, and it won't stop crop damage. And the worst thing that you can do is tell the people who are providing the habitat, the farmers, that you're going to solve their problem by hunting the birds, when you know that that's not actually going to happen. Alternatively, we actually have solutions that will stop crop damage and that will do it actually in the marketplace, meaning that the government doesn't have to be involved in paying for it. Conservation dollars don't pay for it year in, year out. It's something that's economically able to be done that growers themselves are interested in doing because it's effective.
Yeah. Well, Lucille in Green Bay has a comment. Let's get her into it. Lucille, hi. Thank you for calling.
Thank you. My reason for calling is I think that if you want to make this hunting thing, you have to do it in certain counties. I don't think all counties should be involved in it, because I know people that, farmers and that they just plain get rid of every crane on their property, even though there is no hunting. So I think if you're going to do that, you have to look at the counties and not put it in all counties.
Anne, you want to make a comment?
Right. Yeah, we're not sure exactly how it would be implemented in Wisconsin, and these are the kind of ideas that, you know, we need to put out there. The habits of these birds are very, very different in spring when planting happens and the damage happens, as compared to the fall when the hunting season that is proposed would happen. That's when the birds are gathering together in larger flocks. They're using those harvested cornfields, and there's very specific places in the state where they gather to roost and stage before they continue on their southward migration. So a lot of thought has to be put into exactly where these open areas might be and what the cranes use them for. We don't want to jeopardize those roosting areas that are important for not only our resident Wisconsin birds, but also the birds that are coming in from Minnesota, Michigan, and even Ontario.
Thanks for calling. Reed in Clintonville, on to you. Hi, Reed.
Yes, good morning, folks. And I just want to make a comment concerning the hunting of cranes. We've had the hunting of the mourning dove, and I must say, I rarely see a mourning dove these days. I don't know if the hunting pressure had anything to do with that or not. I did have I see these magnificent birds fly past or over and land around Clintonville twice a year. My wife and I go out and look at them. My wife is an artist who does a lot of drawing of the cranes. One time recently, my wife and I, well, within the past 3 years, my wife and I were out riding mountain bikes. We came across an injured sandhill crane and had the opportunity to pick it up and rescue it, take it to a licensed rescuer. The bird ultimately died, but the flight feathers were able to be taken and glued into another bird to help that other bird fly. And anyone that's had the opportunity to come close to a creature such as this, such a historic creature, you know, related to to our history from time immemorial, that anyone that would consider shooting a creature such as this, it really doesn't make any sense, you know. And the last thing I'll say is I think turkeys probably do as much or more crop damage than cranes do. And I'll listen off the air, and thank you for the opportunity here.
Thanks very much for calling, and we'll give our guests a chance to respond or comment. We need to take a quick look at the news weather, and we'll be back with our guests Jeb Barzin and Ann Lacy right after the news. There was a time here in Wisconsin when seeing cranes was kind of a rare thing. You know, didn't see them very often, or if at all. But we've had increased awareness, effective collaborations. Crane populations have really recovered dramatically, and sandhill cranes are a real success story. Larry Mueller here. Thank you so much for joining us on the Ideas Network. Talking about sandhill cranes, there's a proposed legislation to create a hunting season for them. What do you think? Is it time or is it unnecessary? Would you participate in a hunt? Our guests today, Jeb Barzin and Ann Lacy from the International Crane Foundation in Baraboo, are with us to answer your questions about cranes when you call in at 1-800-642-1234, email at talk@wpr.org, or go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show, and you can post a question or a comment or a photo there. Back after the news. Thanks for listening in on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here, talking today about cranes and looking at the proposed hunt for sandhill cranes here in Wisconsin. Our two guests, Jeb Barzin and Ann Lacy, they both work with the International Crane Foundation. Jeb directs field ecology there, and Ann is the long-term crane research coordinator. So obviously, they've had a lot of experience and work with cranes and can bring a lot to bear to this discussion. You can join in at 800-642-1234. And we did have a caller earlier who had a comment relating to cranes. And, Jeb, maybe I'll just turn to you for a reaction and maybe to summarize that comment.
I think it was Reed from Clintonville who was talking. He was sharing an expression that's very we hear very commonly, which is, how could anybody think of shooting these magnificent birds? And cranes basically, when it comes down to it, are cool. You know, people from every walk of life look at a crane and they see value in it. And that means then that we have a even greater responsibility to make decisions about them as a resource in a constructive way, in a way that really benefits many other species because of the wetlands that they use or how they interact with the people providing habitat, such as farmers. And again, it was mentioned that, well, you know, what about this crane hunting stuff? And I just want to emphasize that as far as a scientific fact goes, crane hunting will not stop crop damage, and we have alternatives that really do work, and they work in a way that's very effective and don't take conservation dollars to work. But I think the other part of Reed's question, and Larry, you were mentioning dealing with effective collaborations. Well, if you're going to have effective collaborations, you have to be able to work with farmers. You have to be able to work with hunting groups, which provide an awful lot of habitat, wetland habitat in particular. You have to be able to work with bird watchers. You have to be able to work with people who have a real wide variety of different perspectives. For that to happen, you have to keep focused on what is the issue at hand. There is an important social question as to whether it's appropriate to hunt cranes or not. And that discussion is important to occur in a way that's really constructive, because without it, we make decisions that are based on silly things. And whether or not it's appropriate to hunt cranes is a discussion that all people from all kinds of walks of life should participate in. And because cranes are so cool, they really need to in order for that decision to be made well. Not just hunters, not just farmers, not just bird watchers, not just the Crane Foundation, not any one entity or organization or person. but that society as a group, because it really represents the very basis of conservation as we know it. Mm. There are lots of places in the world, just because you can sustainably remove birds from a population, which can happen with cranes, you can hunt them without the population declining, for example, doesn't mean that that is what how we want to use that resource. Robins or thrush-like birds that look like robins are hunted in Italy. And sparrows are eaten in Cambodia. There are all kinds of animals taken in all kinds of cultures that people feel are appropriate to hunt. But that doesn't mean that we do or do not automatically say that they should be hunted. And it's a no-brainer that you can remove birds from the population scientifically or without harming the population. But that's not really the question. The question is, do we want to use a resource in this way?
Steve in Waterford, it is your turn. Hello, Steve.
Hi, how are you guys?
Great, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, I guess having experience with sandhill cranes and others right on our property, I was wondering why would anybody even consider eating them? We certainly have an abundance of food products in our culture here. I just listened to the comment previous about eating sparrows and things of that nature in Cambodia, but there, you know, poultry and things like that or game birds are pretty sparse, but and you take what you get. But seeing these things up close, and I mean within 4 or 5 feet, I can't believe anybody would want to eat one. Am I missing something? Are they tasty? Has anybody ever eaten one?
Well, Anne, you want to comment?
Yeah, Larry was just telling an interesting story about that, about eating them. We do hear all the time, as a matter of fact. The sandhill cranes have been hunted in central and western states and several Canadian provinces for decades. So apparently they are quite good table fare. So ribeye in the sky was not an exaggeration. I have not partaken of it myself. But yeah, the days of subsistence hunting and going out and back and catching dinner for the night or the week is gone. This is true. But we still have a very strong hunting ethic in Wisconsin. And it has, you know, people talk about how there are less and less hunters out there now. And, you know, we need to get young people out there and teach them about Wisconsin's hunting heritage and appreciate all of our natural resources. And that is getting less and less, and bringing up sandhill cranes as a resource now in this kind of a different day and age, it's part of the discussion that's going to have to happen, that what Jeb was talking about. And it's difficult because most people see them in their backyards now and they can't imagine it. It's not giant flocks of snow geese coming through that you only see twice a year when they're going north or going south. So they're residents. They're among us, and that's part of the difficulty.
Yeah, there you go. Thank you, Steve, for calling. Matt in La Crosse, want to give you a chance. Hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I wanted to say thanks for the comment about the value. I thought that was really great. In addition, it seems to me that if East Central Wisconsin is such a important hotbed for cranes, especially during the fall migration, then wouldn't it be in the long-term interest of crane populations in North America to maintain that as a staging zone for the cranes and simply, and of course this costs money, but why is it always that business, which is probably the lowest end of human endeavors, have to override those things that are sometimes the most valuable? But it seems to me it would be easier to compensate farmers and in the long-term health of the crane population to really compensate farmers for the damage that's done, especially in the spring. Because I think if we start hunting, a lot of people have been saying that, have been calling in, if we're still hunting in those counties, couldn't that potentially have such a disrupting effect, since if that is such an important staging area, that it could offset, you know, where the cranes are gathering for migration, or potentially disrupt that, stressing the cranes out, et cetera, et cetera. Mm. I guess I'll take any kind of a response off there. Thanks.
All right. Thanks for calling. Appreciate it. Jeb, do you want to start and comment?
Well, I appreciate the comments, and I think because there isn't a actual management plan for a hunt in the state of Wisconsin that exists, how to try and the things that you would need to contemplate in implementing such a plan are pretty extensive and kind of beyond the scope of what we can have in a discussion right here. I think that the Department of Natural Resources, who would be responsible for formulating a plan and then submitting it to the Fish and Wildlife Service for consideration, they could develop a plan that could allow for cranes to be hunted in a sustainable way, and sustainable means that the population wouldn't decline and there wouldn't be a lot of negative impacts of that sort of hunt. So that is something that probably can be done, even if we don't know exactly what it is. But I want to kind of focus on another thing that Matt touched on, which is one of the arguments that are used for hunting cranes is that it will generate money from the sale of licenses to hunt cranes that can then be paid to farmers for compensation. The problem with this is that economically, this isn't going to work very well. Last year, in the state of Wisconsin alone, over 76,000 acres of corn were treated with a repellent. It works. They didn't have any damage on those fields, but the cost per acreage is somewhere between $5 and $7 an acre to treat. Now, if you calculate that out, that equals somewhere in the vicinity of $300,000 to $500,000, roughly, a year. The amount of money that you could generate from license fees are not going to come anywhere near that amount of money on an annual basis alone. And that number of treated acreage of corn is increasing every year, so that the idea that we can pay for this through hunting license fees doesn't really match the scale upon which the solution is being deployed. But if you have it fit within the overall corn economy, and that farmers are willing to do it on their own because they want an effective solution, they want to be left alone, that they don't want to go through the government to get that compensation money, which often causes problems, even if the programs run well, and they're interested in seeing, many of them are interested in seeing cranes as well. Why not have a solution that works in the marketplace that can carry through? Because that's an effective use of conservation resources.
Jimmy in Shatek, thank you for calling. Hello.
Good. Thank you for taking my call. I'm an avid Canadian goose hunter up in the Shatek area in the Barron County and Rusk County area, and I hunted in fields this fall in the last past years with 200 to 300 cranes in those fields. And I talked to different people, and they say, well, there isn't any cranes around. I said, well, if you go to different spots in the area in the county, you will find cranes. And I'm all for hunting. I am a Ducks Unlimited member, and I hunt geese about every day. But out in west, they killed, out in the Dakotas, a friend of mine can go out there and he can kill three a day out there with a permit. I would just like to see, and I love the cranes, they're a beautiful bird, but for hunting, and I don't want to see them get a disease and then all of a sudden there isn't any, I'd like to hunt, get a permit for $5 and hunt one crane, and by the way, it is a very good tasting bird, so.
Mm-hmm.
That's my comment, and I'll take my comment and listen to you off the air.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Anne?
Yeah. That we just heard the other side of the same coin, that a lot of people see these birds as they are beautiful and they are majestic. And they think, okay, so let's see if they would be an admirable foe out in the field. So the difference between hunting and what hunting would be in Wisconsin if we ever had a season or anywhere in the Eastern Flyway and out in the Dakotas is that is a population of about 500,000 birds, give or take.
Okay.
We may have 60,000 birds in all of the upper Midwest that migrate down towards Florida. So the bag limits are something that is very much, the math will be much trickier on that. But
yeah.
That I want to chime in, too, because I think it's a really important point. Oftentimes, this discussion denigrates into if you think that cranes should not be hunted, you're anti-hunting. Or if you think that cranes should be hunted, you're anti-crane. And I think that Jimmy's comments are spot on in terms of you can be interested in hunting cranes and like cranes.
Yeah.
It's not the polarization that we immediately slip into in terms of this discussion, but there are a lot of important viewpoints that should be brought out there and engaged in. And it's really the issue of people engaging in this issue that can lead us to a constructive decision about how we're going to use that resource.
Hmm. Paul in Menominee, your turn. Hi, Paul.
Hi there. I'd like to make a little bit of a philosophical point following up on some of your earlier callers. At this stage, we either hunt or want to hunt wolves, elk, deer, doves, squirrels, ducks, geese, turkeys, coons, bears, rabbits, geese, and I'm sure I've missed a few. So I'm not sure what the mentality is that any new animal that seems to be around or in excess, we should start hunting. Maybe someone can fill me in, you know, where our brains are going with that kind of thinking.
All right.
Well, Jeb, go ahead.
You want to take a crack at that, Jeb?
Yeah. Ann was talking about two sides of the same coin. If you can imagine a coin that's getting more cubic and having lots of different sides, that's the complexity of the conversation. It is, you know, if people are interested in hunting cranes, it is a species that they say if it's hunted out west, why can't we hunt it here? And that's a legitimate question to put out there. But just because it is hunted in some places also doesn't mean that it should be hunted in Wisconsin or in this population at all. These are decisions that we can really make about this bird. And ultimately, the question is a social question. It's arbitrary doesn't put the right connotation on that word, but it is a social decision that we make, and we make it for a variety of reasons, because we want to add another species that people would find hunting, that they find it sporting to hunt, or that they don't think it's appropriate to hunt, and they think that this bird is a harbinger of conservation in Wisconsin and shouldn't be hunted as a result. There's all kinds of different viewpoints that are out there.
Yeah, and we've had several nice photos posted up on our Facebook page that are pretty cool. There's one right there. Some cranes and...
Yeah, they don't wait around. They might be standing on ice, but in Wisconsin, because real estate is everything, people know this, cranes know it as well. And so most of the birds that are likely back right now are breeding birds, making sure that they stake their claim before somebody else beats them to it.
Because you don't breed if you don't have turf. That's the crane rule.
And several, you know, and I know a lot of people are wondering, and you did talk about methods for controlling it, and certainly there are some good ways to reduce or even eliminate crop damage.
It's a good thing to bring up. In some of the news that first occurred when the issue of hunting was brought up, and especially as the legislation or the proposed legislation attempted to link it with crop damage, people said, oh, if you put out a deterrent, a taste deterrent out there, the cranes will just move. But they really won't. There are two basic ways that you can solve crop damage. You can try to move the birds out of the field that they're feeding in, and that invariably fails. It's used with propane cannons, with pyrotechnics, with dogs, with people driving their car out. There's a lot of different ways that it actually gets deployed, essentially. But basically, you're moving the bird from one field to another. And in that case, you are moving the problem around. And with a smart bird like a crane, they quickly learn that whatever it is that you're doing is just something that isn't threatening. And they'll learn, because they want to be in that field so badly, to come back. What we've done in terms of the approach that we've researched out and are implementing is we're separating the actual crop, which is the corn that's being planted in spring, as Ann said. We're separating that out from the rest of the things that are in the field that the birds still like. And so by putting a taste deterrent on that corn, the endosperm of which lasts for no more than about 17 days, depending on how warm and or cold the spring is, once that corn gets beyond that period, the birds leave it alone. But they stay in the field because they're feeding on other things that are in the field. And so by separating out the crop from the rest of the fields, the birds stay put. They stay in that same field. And so the problem really is not moved around, but it's effectively solved. And it's really important to understand the ecological context in which this deterrent technique is being used.
So it really isn't fair to say that you know, we can hunt and then we're going to resolve that crop damage problem, because it's not going to solve it at all.
It's worse than fair. It's selling farmers a bill of goods.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know, we know we can solve the problem, but it doesn't involve hunting.
Connie in Portage. Hello.
Yes,
to you.
Hello. I don't know if I'm mistaken. Didn't they hunt cranes in Wisconsin 100 years ago? and almost got them to the point of extinction? I thought I read that.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I would say, sure, they were hunted, and it was sustenance hunting, market hunting, but there also wasn't as many birds in the state as there are now. And, well, there wasn't as many people back then, too. But, yeah, that was Aldo Leopold estimated that there may have been about 25 breeding pair in the whole state in the 1930s-ish. Mm. So we have come a long way.
Well, we have cranes where we live. And to me, I think you should call it not the crane hunt. You should call it the crane slaughter, because they can't even get off of the ground before my dogs are out here. I mean, it's, I don't know what man would want to hunt a crane.
Well, if you talk to the people that have gone out west, the Dakotas or Texas, you're hard pressed to get as many as the bag limit. Because they are very, very wily, and they notice the littlest thing awry. They have good eyes. So who knows if our birds would get to that point or not? They are different populations, but they are quite admirable foes out west.
Yeah, I doubt it. But thank you anyway.
All right, thank you for calling. Appreciate it.
I got to put in Anne speaking from experience, not because she's hunted cranes, but when we try to capture cranes to put bands on them so that we can identify them in the field, which is how we build the research information that we're really talking about today. You realize just what, when cranes have any suspicion that something is not to their liking, they're very clever about avoiding it. We watch them step over snares and feed on the bait that we put out. We see them taste a substance that we put on the corn to make them fall asleep, and they'll spit the corn out. We've seen them do all kinds of amazing things if they think something is up. So they can be very smart.
Oh, man. Pat in St. Cloud. Hello.
Hello. I do not want cranes hunted because I do fear, as the woman before, that they will get more wily and we won't see them as often as we would like to. We followed a family of cranes just about half a mile away from our house that were there was a couple, and then they had two chicks, and we watched them all summer as the chicks grew. And one morning we were leaving to go to an early farmer's market, and coming over the hill, the four of them were walking very sedately over from one side of the road to the other. We had to stop, and we stopped and watched this incredible parade of four cranes. It was a really neat moment.
You know, the comments on we should or we shouldn't hunt cranes are really important comments. And the way to make those comments matter is to engage, to talk with groups that are interested for or against hunting, to make your voice known, because that's the only way that you can really get to be a part of this decision. And so I'd encourage you to really engage in that. I'd be shot probably by our public relations folks at the Crane Foundation. One of the ways that you can learn more about this issue is to go to our website, which is www.savingcranes, which is one word in plural, .org. And when you get to that spot, you can look down on the left-hand column and click on a crane hunting issue. And that's the easiest way to get to some of the information that we're talking about, and I'd encourage people to do it.
Absolutely, and we actually have a link. If you're on my Facebook page, you should go on and take a look at the great photos that people have taken of cranes that are up. Just scroll down a little bit, and you'll find that link to the International Crane Foundation as well. Well, we're still up in the air. We don't know where is it at in the next 10 seconds. Are we legislation
we need to keep having conversations like this so everybody knows has all the information that they can make a decision with.
The legislation that's put forward, I don't know if it's gone anywhere, and various people know a whole lot more about the legislative process don't believe that it will go anywhere. But this is a real issue, and we need, the sooner that we can address it constructively, the better.
Anne Lacy and Jeb Barzin of the International Crane Foundation, our guests. Wasn't it great to have them along? I really appreciate their time here. And obviously, we'll keep you up to date on what's going on with that proposal. Thank you for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network.